The head teacher said, "We don't allow students to bring cars, and I learned how to drive at a young age. My mom had a car." I knew they said we don't allow students to bring a car, but I knew it was also, I'm gonna look cool.
Was this for like prom or something, or just a normal day?
Just a normal day. Mm-hmm. I think actually we're leaving. We're going back home, like holiday. I escaped from school, went home, picked up the car.
Oh, wow.
Drove it to the school. And then the whole school just came, Bonnie has brought a car. So I caused commotion in the whole school. The head teacher gets out of his office. He's like, "What's going on? Everybody's in the compound. Everybody's screaming. The kids are screaming." And it wasn't even a fancy car. It was like a Raum, those small cars.
Anything.
I brought it. The guy was like, he called the Askari, "Lock the gate."
What?
So they locked the gate, and this guy was pissed. He told me, "Get out of my school right now."
Yeah, I'm from a beautiful place, the Pearl of Africa. Hailing with a 256, it's in my blood. That's a gem where the mountains rise. With stories untold, the tapestry of cultures unfolding, so vibrant and bold. A symphony of stars, a celestial light. The drums beating, echoing through the night, just like a beacon of light. A reflection that's coming up from the Nile. I'm flowing straight into the heart of Africa with timeless stories untold. Sup, dog?
Welcome back to yet another episode of On Tape, the podcast. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, wherever you are. I hope you're doing well. Today I have an exciting guest with me. I'm going to let him introduce himself, but this episode has been, it's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
It's been a minute and finally he's here. So I want you to introduce yourself because I don't want to sell you, but first introduce yourself to these amazing people.
Hello everybody on the tape, the podcast. I'm so honored to be on here. I was one of my plans when I came to Uganda to just collaborate with other people who do podcasts. But before I introduce myself, I want to like appreciate you for the work you do. It's amazing. I've been listening to your episodes. I enjoy the one for Rianne. I enjoy the one, nice. The lady who did the animation cartoon. You're asking about that was good. I know you had issues with the audio, but I listened through it,
and
I remember messaging you like as a content creator too. I know sometimes things like that happen.
Yeah,
it happens, and then you don't have, you just have to put the work there, and it's a learning lesson. But anyway, to everybody listening to this podcast, my name is Bonnie Chibuka, born and raised in Uganda. I currently live in the United States of America in Michigan, and I'm the host of the Ugandan Boy Talk Show podcast. I just finished my live show on Saturday, I think we'll talk about. I thank everybody who was there. And it was part of my plan to come and do some podcasts here when I'm in Uganda. But also the other thing that people don't know, people think I'm a full-time podcaster because they see the work on YouTube every time, all the time.
Like,
but I'm actually not. This is just a side gig. Not a side gig, but it's a hobby. I do it in my free time, and on full time, I'm an aircraft mechanic.
Nice, nice. There's a lot to get into, but before we even get into it, I want to first ask you the three little questions that I ask everyone that comes on the podcast. You've kind of already given us an idea, but on a deeper level, who are you, where are you coming from, and where are you going? What comes to mind?
Yeah, like I said, I'm Bonnie Chibuka. I come from a small family, poor family. A lot of people, when they see me today, they think I came from a rich home. I think I was actually doing a interview at NRG, and I told them I'm an aircraft mechanic. It's like, "Oh my gosh, that's crazy." And I told them I grew up in a poor family, and my journey to the United States was crazy to be there. But that doesn't define who I am, and I tell people that where you come from does not define who you are. You can change that narrative. Where I'm going?
Yeah.
I'm going far ahead. I don't even know, but like, I just want to keep being better. As long as I'm being better, changing my best, you know, like there's not time to settle, like changing your best every day. When you do something great, then you know you can do even greater. So where I'm going is like just further, have my podcast still going, make it bigger, share our stories and my career. I want to go like higher, the higher I can go, and just keep doing my career. And that's what I can say.
That's nice. So getting into the podcast, obviously I went for the live show And honestly, it was just, I was just super proud. It was nice to, because I think I started listening to the podcast earlier, like mid last year, I think. And for me, it was just super, I hear you when you say it's like, it's not a side thing, but it's hard to explain. Like, you know, when you do something, it doesn't pay you, but you're showing up every day. And it's hard to explain to people that I'm putting all this effort into something that's just a side thing, something that I'm just doing. So I hear you. So what's it been like, this homecoming edition, coming back home, the love that you've received? Do you feel supported by your country? What's it been like, really?
Yes, I feel supported by my country in Uganda. Mm-hmm. And it's crazy because everybody was asking me, how were you able to pull off this live show when you're not even in the country? Yeah. That was the craziest part, to sit down and think about that, like to have, I set up everything before I was here, like the sponsors, you know, people are here in the country struggling to find sponsors for their events and stuff, but like, how were you able to pull all that off, and how are you able to pull off this cool live show, which I'm thankful for people even to say that, but it has been connections. I have a lot of people on the ground that have connected me to all those sponsors you saw in the live show. People who connected me to the venue. I want to shout out to Nyanya Supreme. She connected me to the CEO of Koteri, and that's why I had my thing there. So it was a blessing because it's been connections, and people thought, oh, you must have a lot of money. You must have put a lot of, yes, we put some money in, but it would have been more expensive if I didn't have connections, if I didn't know people. But also the other thing is to the love in Uganda is great for my podcast. It's Uganda, Kenya, and the USA that I hire and the people that are listening to that. And Uganda has been great because we've been nominated twice in the Pulse Awards.
Yeah.
And we've won through those because of the efforts of people who are voting. I know people are voting around the world, but the homegrown people have really, really supported me and loved me. And the number that turned out for the live show was amazing. It was great. I talked to the owner of the place and he said, I think we had about 150 people.
Obviously, that's a very small place.
Yeah, and it's a very small place. Because even before the live show, they told me they can only seat 50 to 70 people.
Yeah.
And I called them, I'm like, I have a lot of people I want to come. But then at the end of the day, the manager was like, we had to just get extra seats and people sat and it was amazing. So I loved the support from the people. And there was still a lot of other people who messaged me that were not able to make it. Yeah. But I was happy that people came. So I feel really supported by the people back in Uganda. And even you guys who have podcasts here in Uganda, to see you show up, to come and support your other podcaster. It was amazing to see you guys in the audience. And I love it. I loved it.
I love it. I feel like as an industry, Uganda is definitely growing. Like podcasting was not a thing before. You know, you couldn't really tell someone, hey, this is what I want to do. But I feel like with people like you, it's now becoming easier for younger podcasters who are starting to be like, hey, I want to be like Bonnie. Mm-hmm. I want to be like who? So I love that you're doing that for us. And I know you've gone already around on all these shows and gone deep into that. So I don't want to talk about, I mean, I know we will talk about content creation today, but I don't want it to be the main thing that we're talking about today. And because this is like a homecoming edition, I wanted us, this is home, this is family, I wanted us to have a conversation around our childhood and inevitably how that has contributed to who we are today, what we are doing, and all that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, so do you, should I go first?
Yes.
We have some questions here.
Okay.
So we both get to answer. Right? Ooh, this is nice. Okay. So who has been the biggest influence in your life? What lessons did that person or those people teach you?
I would say the biggest influence in my life has been my dad. My dad and I, when we were growing up, we didn't really have that close relationship. Like, you know how parents can be, like, in Uganda, sometimes people are scared about their dad. The dad comes in, and all of you run away and just scared, you're afraid. So, like, but it's crazy because when I turned, like, 18, 17, things started changing. I built this relationship with my dad to an extent where we're, like, buddies, like, we're friends. Yeah. Like, I'll tell my dad anything, he'll tell me anything, we can talk about stuff. Anytime I have something, anytime I have a decision or a question, I'll call him, hey, dad, this is what I'm going to do. And then he'll ask you questions. He'll be like, why do you want to do that? Well, like he will try to guide you with questions to make sure you have answers for them. So I feel like he's been a big influence in my life and the way I look at life perspective. And he has helped me to guide me. So I would say my dad has, my mom too. I don't want to like ignore her saying like she did not do, she has done a lot helping me in knowing God too, in my faith and my journey. So those two people have been great.
Well, that's amazing. I feel like I can also relate because my dad too has definitely been the biggest influence in my life, and we're so alike. Like he's just a go-getter, and I feel like he has taught me that there are no impossibilities in life. Like whatever it is, you can figure it out. Mm. So yeah, I feel fathers, shout out to fathers who are out here inspiring. Mm-hmm. So now you get to ask me.
Let's go.
One.
Yeah. People who are just listening on Spotify, you can't see this, but we have questions in can. And for people who get a chance to see it, we have conversation starters.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's where we get the questions to ask.
I like to poke people's heads, and I feel like you can ask any other follow-up questions that come up.
All right, this question says, what traditions, if any, have been passed down in your family?
Cheers. My family. Okay, so I come from a very small family, but then also small and very young.
How small?
Family. Like we're five.
Five is small.
Yeah. Like all of us.
Oh, with the mom and dad.
Yeah. Okay, and like good. I say young because my parents are pretty young. I think my dad is only about 44 now.
Okay.
So it's at that point where my brothers are finally becoming teenagers. I feel like we're in the process of creating our own traditions. Before, it's been a lot of, this is what my mom got from her side, or this is what my dad got from her side. But I feel like we like to travel together. Okay. Actually, that's like one thing that's probably, yeah. Sure. Because, yeah, my family and I, we've done a lot of trips, both in and outside the country, but we love to experience like new things together, and I know I say that from like a privilege point, but for me, traveling has done a lot for me in terms of exposure and just like understanding how people think, or even how different people you know, kind of look at life. So I'd say that's a really nice tradition that I would want to continue with my own kids.
Where have you guys gone?
Interesting that you're a states person. So the first time I left the country, I think, was with my family in 2010.
Okay.
So we first stayed in San Francisco for a while. My father was doing some work
in America?
There. Yeah. Wow. California. Yeah, so that's the very first place that I traveled to. And then from there, even just traveling to places like Fort Portal or the north of Uganda or like things like that. But I feel like in that time, I learned a lot. Even just seeing how my father processed, my parents as adults processed everything and all that. So I feel like that's the exposure has been.
No, that's great. That's great. I didn't know you've been to America. I should have asked you that before. What year was that when you went there?
That was like 2010.
Oh, wow. That's before even I went.
That was like 2010, I think.
I've not been to San Francisco. I've been to LA. But I want to go to San Francisco because I'm a NBA fan and I like the Warriors. And
I just moved to
San Francisco. But it's crazy you say that because it's the same thing with me to like travel. And ever since I went to America, every time I come back, I like to get my family and we do a road trip. We go somewhere. So like the first time we went to Arua, another time we went to Mukden Falls.
Yeah.
I take them to like different places in Uganda. We just do Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
And then we travel together. This year we did not. But also another tradition that I do now when I come back, I take all of them to Cafe Java.
My family and I do that a lot too. Is it a Kampala thing? We're meeting with family, it's like...
I took like 10 people with the kids to Cafe Java and we just gathered long tables.
So, but definitely eating together, traveling together, I feel like those can bond you and the family. So ask the other host anything you'd like to know about them.
Anything you'd like to know about me?
So, no, you have to start. You ask me anything you'd like to know about me, then I'll do very fast.
What do you do besides podcasting?
Oh, interesting. I'm a digital marketer.
Ooh.
So I work on the internet. So I do social media strategy. I do graphics and design. I'm also an animation and visual effects student. Oh, nice. So I'm someone that's really getting into
I
guess sometimes I don't know how to explain to people that the podcast is both a hobby and my work.
Okay.
It's like, you know, part of what I want to do even
for
life. So yeah, that was a nice one. Let me ask you something. What was your favorite game as a child and why?
I played football a lot. That was my favorite. We played football. I got caned for that. We got caned for that. We are playing football when we didn't even have a soccer ball. I'm mixing soccer and football.
The Cavera tied together?
Yeah, there was a Cavera one. There was a banana fiber one.
Oh, yeah.
I actually have the banana fiber in my office just to look at and just bring back the memories.
Ooh, I've seen your studio.
Yeah.
I love your studio. Did you do that yourself?
Yeah.
I think I've seen reels of you doing it. Mm-hmm. I'm so into DIY. I am so into doing things yourself.
I did everything by myself, painting, organizing. Yeah, and it's crazy because I'll be on the internet watching somebody's studio. I'm like, I really like that. So I go to my studio and then I adjust it to that. And it's been a blessing to be able to do this thing for myself because one of the challenges from podcasters, as you've heard, is finding space to do their work, their podcast, like they struggle out. So for me, when I got that in my basement, it's been amazing to have that studio.
Yeah, I wish more Ugandans thought like that because like a lot of content creators here, when they think I want to do podcasting or I want to do YouTube, they think I need to, you know, go pay for a big luxurious studio, buy the best microphones or what. But I just wish people knew that you can just start where you're at and you keep making adjustments and that's getting crazy. Better as time goes.
I was taking a trip when I was in Kampala here to some of the locations. I'm not going to mention names, but we asked them about their pricing of the session. And to do a session 1 hour is $350,000.
Jesus
That's Christ. Without editing.
Damn.
Editing is $150,000.
Mm.
So you look at it like you're going to spend $500,000 to do an episode.
One episode.
And that $500,000, you could have bought a mic, you could have bought something for your own. Which I'm not against people having places for other people to record. But if you're just a startup, that's not a good idea. It would be nice for like these people,
companies. Supported
by the companies. If you want to do like a podcast, that would be a good idea. And I mean, my cousin too has a studio at Ivory Plaza. I don't think his prices are this expensive, but he has an opportunity there. And if you find these affordable places, he can like help you do that.
Yeah, I feel like we need to do that more because like I don't even want to think about how many people haven't started because. Mm-hmm. I don't have microphone, though. I don't have what. But, you know, improvisation. I have a friend that's just started a podcast and she uses her phone.
Yeah,
and she, you
I
know,
did that
so
too.
All, me too, you I know. So that. I'm just like, I don't understand. But anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you were supposed. Did you ask me?
I think.
No, one picking. Thing. No, was
I asked again.
Well, the game.
Yeah, okay. We're still actually on that. Why? Yeah. You didn't say why football was the favorite.
Oh, I didn't say why.
Yeah, you didn't say the why.
No, I liked it because all my childhood friends liked that. Like, that was the thing. Like, we just.
Was it like your opportunity to connect
with
your friends?
Yeah.
Spend time together.
Spend time together. We played football for like money, for anything and everything. Yeah. It was just a life. All right. How would you describe yourself as a child? Were you happy?
As a child, I would say I was very much in like the most purest of ways. I feel like I was, if you can be yourself, I was as myself as I could be. I was very bubbly, as a very bubbly child, very into entertainment, dance, music, writing, art, everything. And I think definitely I should not have ignored all these passions that I had as a child. But I feel like as a child I was who I'm now growing into, the version of me that I had kind of put aside because of society and all this pressure and all that. But in my purest form, I just feel like I was very bubbly, very into the earth, outside, trees, soil, very loving, wanting to just pour love into things. And but I think I was happy overall.
Yeah.
What about you?
I was happy. I grew up with my brother. Yeah. I only have one brother. My older brother, and then my mom and dad, who were happy. We were not rich, but we were happy. Like, we had what we needed.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, sometimes you'd miss three meals a day, but, like, that was part of life. So it's not something that would think about that it's going to piss you off. Now that you think about when you can't have three meals a day, you know life was hard. But when you're in the moment, you'd be like, as long as I've played football, as long as I've seen my friends, you'll be happy. But now the society has taught us of the things that we need, the things. So now when you don't have, that's why we have a lot of unhappy people right now.
Yeah.
Because back in the day, even when you didn't have shoes, you were still happy because you knew something that you treasure. But like now, when you don't have the nice shoes and you have this venue you're supposed to go to, like, Wanange, I don't have the shoe. I think, what am I going to wear? It's in a dress, bichi. And then you'd be sad. But I would say we're happy. Our parents loved us. It was a happy family. So I'd say I was happy.
And I think, speaking of like the happiness that comes with not having much, I feel like to a small extent I can relate, because I first lived with my grandmother. I'm just one of those kids who's, my dad had me so early. Yeah. He passed me on as his mother's child for a while. And when that was happening, it was, my grandmother didn't have much, but I think as a child I was very, I didn't even notice that, you know, there was, you know, some sort of lack or things could have been better. And I think I see it, because even when I moved with my parents, where I was comfortable and all that, I feel like I was happier when I was. I feel like I can see that happening. How has your mental health journey evolved on your journey from childhood to adulthood?
That's a good question. Because when I was little, I didn't even think about mental health. I didn't even know it was a thing. Actually, I'll make it even better. When I went to the US, I didn't still believe in mental health. Said, so if you've been to our zone, go like,
me, I'm like, black. Yeah, I'm black.
I'm hard.
Yeah.
I put it off for a long time. I'll be like, no, like, you just, I'm not change. But when you sit down and think about it, and even till after I went through it with my job, I mean, there's still a lot of other things that were behind that. But like with my job and going through a tough time, you get to experience how your mental health is affected. And that's when I remembered, I'm like, Carla, but there's a lot of other people back home that are going through these things, but your parents will tell you, oh, you know, Chejo, or like, just get over
fine.
It.
Just yeah,
you'll
be
fine. And then for boys, they'll say, you're a boy, you're a man. You need to be a man. You can't even cry, you know, like things like that. But I think it has evolved. It has changed in the way I look at it, because I know it affects people. It affects your happiness, your joy, and you need to seek for help and counseling and talk to somebody about your mental health, because when you try to keep these things to yourself, they will even affect you more than you actually think, and don't ignore it. So that's why I'm big about it, and when I hear somebody talk about mental health, I give respect and attention to it, because there's a lot of people are going through that today.
I hear you. I think I can also relate. Like, I don't want to say Ugandan, but African. We were just brought up in a way where mental health wasn't a thing. Like, if you're not feeling great, I don't know, do something, you'll feel better. Just get out of it. And just like you, I think it took me a while for me to realize. Because me as a child, I was that sickly child who's always in the sick bay, who's always what? And the doctors are checking, there is nothing wrong. Like, what is going on, you know? And then everyone is bullying you. She didn't want to come to class. She's just what? So I think for me, it took a while. But when I finally, you know, got to that point where I understood what it takes for you to not even just be happy forever, but to water that happiness and try to keep it consistent and what, I think right now it's the biggest priority in my life. Even, you know, the whole podcast and everything, I think it's just more important for us to have those conversations a bit more. So yeah, now as an adult, I'm much more, you know, I wake up every day and I'm very sure that I have things that I have to do, because these help me keep my mentor in check.
Yeah.
So yeah, for sure. But that was a nice one.
How would you describe a perfect day when you were young?
Oh, a perfect day when I was young. So it was definitely after the rain. Like, it's not raining, but the rain is done. There was that, you know, after rain, the very, it smells so great. The buds are out. The trees look so green, cleaned up and what. So that was my favorite time to play. And I love to play from outside. And just one of those kids who was always getting dirty every second, because I have to go outside and play with the stones because they are little people in my head and all that. So for me, I loved after the rain. A perfect day is like after the rain, then a bit of sun has come up and you can go out and just play. Yeah, I think so. Well, what about you?
That makes sense. For me, actually, I was thinking about that, like perfect day for me. I used to like to go to Kampala.
Those trips were amazing.
So whenever my dad would say he was going to Kampala, I would cry. I was like, take me with you, and he would take me. But he would tell me, I don't have money to buy you your own seat. You're gonna have to sit on the kameme. I don't even know what they call it in English. And that thing was hot. Like, you sit on it and your butt is warm. By the time you get to Kampala, you can't even sit on that. But I loved every time, like, we would go to Kampala,
Yeah.
I would just likes to go. And every time, if my dad had a car and he's going to Kampala, then I would cry to go with him. So a perfect day was him taking me to Kampala. But also, I started watching football, soccer, Arsenal, when I was younger. Like, when Arsenal wins, it was perfect. I was happy. And I think that's still with me, actually, till today, because I still love soccer, sports. So if Arsenal wins, I'm a happy person.
But no, going out as a child, I think just leaving the house, there was something about it. Like, whether we are just going for lunch, I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
There was just something so nice about getting dressed up. Was there a teacher or teachers who had a particularly strong influence on your life while at school? Tell me about them.
In primary or any level?
I'm not gonna lie.
I think there was a teacher that had a good, but I'm trying to find them. But some of those teachers used to cane us so bad, like even in a good way.
Yeah.
But like some of those teachers did not listen.
What school did you go to?
I went to like primary. There's a school called Narubule Rock Parent School. It's on Hoima Road. It's right after Nansana. Then secondary, I went to St. John's. Wakiso SS. It's also on Hoima Road. And then for my A level, I went to Chisubi Mapea. So I was there for Form 5 and then went back
That's
to
like
Sendai.
Catholic.
Yep, it's a Catholic school. We're just talking about that because I got my suit from Oscar Kampala and he's my OB from
Oh Mapea. My God, you looked amazing.
Thank
by
you.
The way,
thank you.
Yeah.
Oscar, you have to pay for the ad. So I found out he's my OB from Mapea. So we just started talking about Mapea.
Yeah.
It was amazing. But no, the teacher that impacted me in school, I'll go with my geography teacher because he knew how much I loved geography. And what was his name? I don't remember. But he knew I loved geography.
Yeah.
And he was like, I'm going to help you to do better. So he actually helped me and I got a D1 in geography in Form 6.
Yeah.
And I was really happy about it. My parents bought him a chicken. And I gave it to him. But like that was like class wise. But I was trying to think of a teacher that just helped me. You know, that's a struggle, and actually I'll talk about that here because when teachers are in school they're just focusing about them getting paid and doing their job as teachers, like to just teach you.
Yeah.
But I feel like teachers need to help these students about
because you're with them more than you're with your parents
exactly.
at that point.
Like they need to help the students more of the outside world than just the class things. Like help these kids. You're a man. You've been in this life where these kids are coming. Besides telling them, you know, quita chemistry, you know, quita the physics, which is prepare them for the outside world, like this and this and this and this. Talk about that too. I feel like in my life, there isn't a lot of teachers who did that for me. That's why I can't mention
anyone. You have to think hard.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
But like if there was a teacher that he said, not only the class stuff, but outside class, this guy really helped me. So I would urge the teachers to do that more and understand, build a relationship with these students. And this changed after I moved to America because I did my college there, the university in the States. But the professors there, like he's like a buddy of mine. Like we play together. He teaches you in class, but you also do life together. And anyone who teachers feel like they are higher than they say, which they are, but like it helps a lot to build a relationship with the students.
I hear you. I feel like it's really a pandemic because it comes down to like a lot of factors. Like we can't ignore the beating because it's like, first of all, also that builds a lot of resentment in the children. So it's like, it's hard for me to now connect with you on a human level. Mm-hmm. And then of course, not even forgetting about the fact that we have people who are forced to be teachers. We have people who this is not their passion.
Yeah.
And I really hate that because like I've seen personally right now, I have some friends who have gotten into education and some of them that are so passionate about it and just seeing them and I'm just like, I wish this was my teacher. You know, someone that comes to class and they care, like, Bonnie, you don't look happy today. What's going on?
Mm-hmm.
Like, so I feel like we need more of that definitely. And I think when I look back, even me as well, I didn't have so many teachers, but I can say my English teachers from the start, they've always been a big part of my life because like I said, I first lived with my grandmother. So I remember when I moved back with my dad, I was very bad at English. I could not speak good English. Like I had like the worst English and the kids were bullying me a lot for it. So for me going to school, it was like a thing behind my head. Like I have to be the best at English this term and I'm going to be the best. So I got so close to English teachers from an early start, and like even going into high school, I did literature, even though I dropped it for A-level. But like even when I did sciences in my A-level, you'd still find me like having a therapy session with my literature teacher, you know. But like those things, like even me doing sciences, I remember him being very open with me and saying like, I think this is your real passion and you're going to come back to it.
Yeah.
So those are the kind of conversations I feel like we need to have more with our teachers because there's no one who teaches you about life. Exactly. You teach us all this SST, all this English, but I'm not, what am I doing with, I don't know. For someone like me, something is relevant to me now, like the Netherlands, and what's that helping me directly today? So yeah, I feel
like that's the thing, because you see a lot of kids who are going to study their books, to read their books. Yeah, but he's always like number one. We have a kid in class. I had a kid in high school who was always number one. He knew everything the teachers are teaching, everything class-wise.
Yeah.
But after we graduated from six, like, he struggled to make a living outside world. He had good grades.
Yeah.
He had everything. But that goes on to show you that, and I'm not saying, like, you should be in a class, you don't study because good grades won't help, but, like, that shows you, like, we need more onto the good grades, because you're going to come out of your four, of your eight, and then life hits you because
nobody prepared you for that.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter anymore outside here.
Yeah.
And I feel like even, like, imagine what it would do for our academic performances if, like, teachers and students had more relationships. I feel like people would excel, because me, I always passed those subjects where I was friends with the teacher. I always passed, like, it's just a thing, because you like this person, like, even as a person. So you want to learn. You don't want to disappoint them. There's, you know?
Did you get in trouble as a child? What was the worst thing you did?
Yeah, I got into so much trouble as a child, especially when I was still with my grandmother. That's like the first nine years of my life. But I got into trouble a lot, especially for playing.
Yeah.
And I think I could, the worst thing that I've done was, I guess, almost die. I have this big scar on my head. So I think I was like three or something, and I tried to get into the road.
Yeah.
Yeah, and like fell on like those like trenches by the side of the road or what. So I fell on the edge. And my head just burst open, and there was, my grandmother was freaking out because it was a big wound. By the time, it's now still visible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a big thing. But I think for me, it was always things to do with safety. Like, playing was too much.
Yeah.
I had so many scars, climbing trees, what? Yeah.
I think for me, I want to say I was rebellious, because at home, I was a nice kid. My parents can testify. I was humble, quiet. But there's time when I started school, I was rebellious. Like, at school, I don't want somebody to tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want, like, I will go against any rule you put there. So I remember in my high school, the teacher, the head teacher said, we don't allow students to bring cars. And I learned how to drive at a young age. My mom had a car. I knew they said we don't allow students to bring a car, but I knew it was also, I'm going to look cool.
Was this for like prom or something, or just a normal day?
Just a normal day. I think we're actually leaving. We're going back home, like holiday. So my parents had gone, but there's a car at home. I escaped from school, went home, picked up the car.
Oh, wow.
Drove it to the school. And then the whole school just came, Bonnie has brought a car. So I caused commotion in the whole school. The head teacher gets out of his office. He's like, what's going on? Everybody's in the compound, everybody's screaming, the kids are screaming. And it wasn't even a fancy car, it was like a Raum, those small cars.
Anything.
So I brought it, and I caused commotion at the school. The guy was like, he called the askari, lock the gate.
What?
So they locked the gate, and this guy was pissed. He told me, get out of my school right now. And I still had some exams to do to come back, but it was like in a week. The guy was like, get out of my school right now.
Yeah.
And he wanted me to leave the car there and get out. So I left the car in the parking.
So now your parents have to find out now.
Exactly.
Oh.
And my mom was on the board, board for the school. So the following day, they called her in the school, and then she had to answer that. And it was her car that I brought. But yeah, I got in so much trouble. And then when I was at Chisubi, I was in the science class and there's arts class. But so we cleaned our class, and then for the afternoon, they didn't want to make their class dirty. They came to have preps in our class, and they made it dirty. It's like, why don't you guys want to use your class? Because we clean ours, and it was my turn to clean it. So they locked the class, and then me and another friend of mine, shout out to Abbas Mustafa, we went and broke the padlock on the set at class, and we purposely made that class dirty.
With
just
what?
On purpose. Just dirt, just disorganized, throwing papers, just paying them back. I think I look back now, it was childish, but I'm not regretting it. So the following day, the class teacher for the arts class, like, who threw my padlock? I almost got expelled, but they gave us a little punishment and were forgiven. But also speaking English was also another thing I did not want to do. Because I was into sports, and it was not fun to talk about. And then Arsenal.
And then Arsenal. Pass the ball,
and then what? Pass the ball? No. I say that. You can punish me, whatever. So I did it purposely. I know I'm going to get punished.
Yeah.
So I was preparing myself.
You are always
mentally
on the list for Luganda speaking.
We had this thing of like the best Spanish.
Did you guys have a sack?
No, we did not, but they gave us punishment of like sweeping the whole school and mopping all the classes. So they'll read the best financial speaker in the whole week, and I think I was like, my name would be there two times a week. So I was a little stubborn, but
you have to stick to your mother tongue. Are there any funny stories your family members or relatives tell about you that come to mind?
I've been going to know this. I don't know. I can't think of any on top of my head what they would tell. Mm-hmm. But I think my mom tells a story of when I think I was around 8 and my brother was like 10. We were going to Kenya. My mom is Kenyan. So she lost the money for our... At that time, they were using travel documents like Bali. So you pay 5,000. They would take a passport photo. And then you cross to go to Kenya. But she lost the money. So we got to the border. She doesn't have the money. She tells the immigration guy that, can you keep my passport so you can give my kids this travel document? Because the passport, you have to go find it.
Yeah.
The guy was like, no. So me and my brother told my mom, like, we've watched a lot of movies. Don't worry about us. We're going to find a way. So we made ourselves like locals. You know, we're on Malaba border. So they have those two gates.
Yeah.
So we just walked through those gates to the Kenya side. Without paying anything, without travel documents. And then we just told our mom, when you cross through the Kenya side, tell the bus driver to pick us up. That's what we did. And then we crossed the border without documents, without paying. But because my mom doesn't like to break rules, but she just said, you guys do what you want. We came back. When she got the money, we came back to the border and got the travel documents after like a week of being in Kenya. So we came back and got that.
But
yeah, I think my mom tells that story. She didn't know how crazy we were at the age of 8 crossing.
Crazy or smart.
Maybe.
Whichever.
Yeah.
I feel for me the story that I want them to definitely stop telling, that my family members won't stop. My grandmother won't stop talking about there's at this point where she had a shop. So she had like a shop with things and what. So there was like a veranda or what, and of course it's going right into the road. So it got to a point where all my other aunties and uncles were in boarding school and what, and she's really like the one there, and she has to also handle the shop and whatever, and she does a lot of like tailoring and what. So she got to a point where she, because I couldn't stay in one place, she had to tie me to her, you know, those tailoring machines?
Yeah.
So she had to tie my one leg to it so that I don't leave.
Oh,
and then she was, I know, I'm just like, guys, this is literally child abuse. But she really won't stop telling it.
What from your childhood do you want to bring into your kids' lives? What would you rather not?
Okay, I feel like I already touched a bit on this. Definitely that travel. Travel is a big part, if I get children. Traveling is a big part of it, especially at an early age, because I want them to not be limited or, you know, just here. And I feel like sometimes we grow up thinking that the whole world is just like this, like Uganda. And sometimes it's a good thing to go out and see that things are different. And if you work hard, you know. Yeah, so that's a big, big deal. And the other thing, this is actually not even directly coming from my childhood, but it's something that's just so common over here, but beating my children. That's something I'm very intentional about not doing. I don't know what will happen when I get there. I don't know. Sometimes things can happen, but I'm very intentional about it because I just feel like all the times that I was beaten or what, though it was like mostly school or what, like for me, I don't think it helped my character development in any way. I was angry and resentful instead of listening and being compliant. So I don't want that. I don't want my children to go through that. And then the other thing that I'm very serious about is them going to schools that don't just push their minds and their academics, but them being having curriculums or schools that are very practical based, very like, I want my kids from a young age just to do whatever they want to do. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to go through this whole thing that we've all gone through, because, you know, me and my dad almost didn't talk for like 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, me fighting, because I come from a medical background, so I dropped out of school to do this, and I don't want my kids to go through that whole thing where you first do something you don't even want, and I want to support them from the start.
Yeah.
What about you? Oh, wait, before that, you have a child already.
Yeah. When you text about like,
I haven't congratulated you in person.
Thank you. Yeah, I have a daughter. She's 8 months.
Yeah.
Ayla Chibuka. Ayla Keki Chibuka.
Yeah.
That topic of caning, it's been something I've thought about.
Yeah.
I don't want to cane them. Yeah. Well, I think in America it's illegal.
It should be legal here,
but I also, to some extent, a little extent, I understand why they caned us, because I feel like if, at some point I see my life and I'm like, if they didn't cane me, I would have gone astray a little bit. But that's to a little extent. If it's a percentage, it's like 1%.
I see.
Because for me, I feel like I learn a lot when somebody talks to me. Tell me Bonnie, this is not right. Like, if you did this, this is going to happen to you. And then I'll think about it as a person. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I won't want to do this. But like, when you, and that's why I go back to how, why I was rebellious, because when people just caned me, I just felt like I wanted to do it more.
Right?
Like, I know what you're going to do.
You
like, I know what you're going to do. You're going to cane me. How many? 25. Okay.
I'm here.
I'm going to go do that. And I know I'm going to get my 25 later. You know, she great. So it doesn't change a lot. But the thing I want to bring into my kids is just knowing, being humble and just being respectful. Being humble takes you a long way in life. A lot of people, when they gain some fame, become famous, they kind of be proud. But when being humble takes you a long way. And when I say that, a lot of people that came to my live show who helped me, it's from the relationship I've built with them and the connection I've built with them. They're like, oh no, Bonnie would love to help you. Like, people who participated in that, the MCs, the guests themselves.
Yeah.
It's like, oh no, we see how you are. We want to come there and support you and be there for you. But when you're proud, when you kill all the relationships you have, it's not gonna like help you. So it takes you a long way and brings a lot. So I like to bring that to my kids' lives. Just be humble. No matter where you are in life, that's gonna help you a lot.
As Kendrick said, be humble.
No,
that's a big deal. But I think going back to the caning thing just a bit, I feel like you said something, and I think it just made me realize that I think a lot of parents cane because they didn't even have the time to sit down with their kids and like have conversations. Because conversations are harder work. It's easy to cane someone and beat them up, you know, give them their strokes or whatever. But I feel like I want to be a really involved parent. And I know that's hard. Like, it means, but you're not financially slaved to, you know, some type of job where you're 9 to 5. A lot of us didn't see our parents come back home. It was in the morning you hear the car leave, in the evening you hear it come back while you've already gone to bed. And I really don't want that.
That's the thing. I want to be in kids' life. It's important to be in the kids' life.
Sure.
Like, even when, at least when you show that you're trying, the kids will also understand, like, my dad is busy, but he's making an effort. Like, but when you don't show that effort, It's hard. Like, it doesn't mean you're not going to be busy, but just make an effort and show it to them so they can see it.
How would your classmates and friends from school or childhood remember you? Are you still friends with anyone from that time in your life?
Yes, I'm still friends with a lot of my high school friends. Actually, on the live show, I think I had over like 20 people that I went to school with.
Yeah.
The DJ was my, we went to the same, from primary to form six, same schools. We've been best friends. And that's what I'm saying, like, his music, he came and played music there. There was another guy wearing white. He was also my classmate from Mapera. There was also other people in the audience who were my schoolmates. I think that's what they would talk about me. And we still have the relationship. I like to keep the relationship with them. So,
Yeah, and of course, I think it says a lot about someone if they can keep a friendship for that long. And again, also people that have, I mean, I'm also in that adulting balance where it's like there's these new friends that I've met as an adult and they've met this version of me. And then there are those people who know that version, you know, of you or have seen you go through experiences or what, and like those shared experiences and what. It's just, yeah. So I think as well, I'm very much in contact, I think, especially in my high school.
Yeah.
Because I went to one high school for 6 years, but I went to 7 primary schools.
7?
Yeah, I know. Like I said, I was moving a lot. Like, we were moving a lot. So, yeah. But I think high school is what gave me that stability of like, okay, 6 years, and then I kind of made friends there. But I think they would pretty much describe me in the same, only that I was very talkative. I was always on the noise making list, whether at that in the biology class. That only, yeah. I was always talking, so I feel like I should have known from the start that whatever I wanted to do with life had something to do with talking. I was just not getting the memo. But I think talkative, but also still very, I think I've always been very loving, very caring, but yeah, very talkative. Yeah, when you get past that.
Yeah. The solution for that, I was talkative too and stubborn. The solution was for me to go into being a prefect. That's what I did.
I'm also a former prefect. No, for me, even as a prefect, I was those prefects who were punished for punishing people. Oh. We had to write statements.
No, I was a prefect, but everybody loved me. And I was that people's person. And I was a head boy.
That's nice.
And actually in Form 3.
Mm.
And then I was education library prefect in Form 5. I was a center prefect.
Why does that sensible thing?
Yeah. What was
entertainment? Guilty as charged.
Yeah.
No,
that was it for me.
No. But I still even post aside, being a leader, I think does a lot of character development. Mm-hmm. Even for me, I think even all the leadership qualities that I possess now, thinking career wise, work, you know, and start a business, all those things, I feel like being a prefect was, you just now kind of get to another level of responsibility. And as a child, you don't really know what responsibility is.
Yeah.
So I think that was.
What were the hardest moments you had growing up, and what lessons did you learn from it?
Okay, I think for me the hardest moment was the shift when I was about 9. That shift, first of all, finding out that my parents were not my parents, I think it does a lot for you as a child. But I think that shift and trying to adapt, new city, new school, new people that I don't know. So that, I think that did a lot for me. And I think even today I can go somewhere where no one knows me and it's very easy for me to fit in. It's very easy for me to connect to people.
This moment was, I mentioned about the times when we didn't have 3 meals.
Yeah, that's hard.
I mean, now I'm saying it's hard now because I'm looking back.
Yeah.
But I don't know what I was thinking at the time, like as a child. Like, I thought my dad doesn't want to take care of us. And it was hard because I had friends who had 3 meals a day.
Ah, of course, as a child, you're comparing.
Yeah, you're comparing. And that's why comparison was a lot for me that time and made me make bad decisions. And I think that's where I learned that. The question says, what lessons
did you learn?
That's where I learned those lessons because I hosted Pastor Bugembe on my podcast and he said, comparison is a thief of joy. Like, whenever you compare yourselves to other people, it steals your joy. Like that, I learned that at a young age. Right now, I don't compare myself to somebody. I see you have a cool mic. I'm gonna work hard
and get it.
I'll be like, man, you have a good mic. I like it. I'm not gonna say anything else. Like, I'm gonna work hard, get it. But I'm not gonna hate you because you have a cool mic because you have this. I want you to help me. Like, hey, where did you buy your mic? Like that way.
Yeah.
But every time you compare yourself to another person, they're doing good, and then you get. It kills your joy. It kills your vibe. So that's a lesson I have learned.
That's a very nice attitude to have. Okay, so what was the relationship you had with your parents like growing up? And how does that affect your love life today?
I think I talked about that earlier, about my relationship with my dad. It wasn't that great. We didn't really have a lot of communication, but I think it wasn't until I turned 18. But it wasn't bad. I'm not going to say it.
Like empty.
Yeah, it was just so empty. Not, it wasn't like, I can't tell you like, hey, we did this and this and this and that. But once I grew up, then actually that relationship got better because now you can talk to him about anything. By the time when I was little, I didn't even know what to say to him. He didn't like, we didn't really have anything. He wasn't bad. He caned us a lot. Like you do something wrong, they'll cane you. He caned me. My mom caned me. They caned me a lot, but I don't think that killed my relationship with them. I knew they were doing what they were supposed to do as parents to be able to raise me. And to some extent, you give them credit. Maybe what they did helped me to be in this position. But I also say, like, maybe they would have done it in a different way and I still turn out to be the same. Who knows? But that's what the relationship was like with my parents.
And as an adult, before you got married, do you feel like it affected the partners you chose in any way, or did it?
No, I don't think so. Mm-hmm. One thing I remember for sure, like, even if my parents had an argument, you wouldn't hear about it.
Oh yeah, that's nice. You wouldn't see it.
Like, they would either go to the bedroom and sort that out, but you would never see them, like, fight in front of you. And that's what I took out of that now. Even if it's not a partner, even if it's not a lover person, it's a friendship. I have a problem with you. I'm going to put you on the side and say, Tina, I didn't really like what you did here.
Yeah.
Because this is what... But also it helps now that I actually have a bachelor's degree in culture anthropology, of studying about different cultures and how to resolve conflict, how to avoid conflict. Because the way I take my life now, if you did something wrong to me, I'm not going to back at you. I'm not going to scream at you.
Yeah.
I'm going to put you on the side, I'll ask you a question. Why did you do that? You tell me your reason why you did it. And then I'm like, what would that make you feel? Or something like that. People think that's stupid, but it helps a lot.
Yeah, I feel like it helps because you'd also feel like ashamed.
Yeah.
Like, why did you do this?
Yeah, exactly. And it helps you to not overreact. Because I do things a lot with a different perspective. And what I think is okay might not be okay with you.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I did this because I was thinking about it in this way.
Yeah.
But when we talk through it, then we avoid the long run of screaming at each other.
Yeah,
but there's some people who don't do it like that. So that also helps a lot, and it has changed the way.
But then that's how it's affecting your love life. Because it means that you're probably not shouting with your partner either. So I can see that.
Yeah.
But that's nice. I think for me, I got quite the other end of the stick. I'm just one of those people with deep daddy issues, which directly, obviously, comes with my relationship with my dad.
Mm-hmm.
And self-awareness is key, but I definitely see it progress. But at first, it was like, you're looking for your father. You're looking for someone who's as emotionally unavailable as they were.
Mm-hmm.
And and it's like a constant attention seeking and kind of cycle. So I feel like, but that's kind of how.
How has your adult life been different from what you'd imagine? Would have imagined?
I think as a child, you draw all these rainbows and hills of like how perfect it's going to be when you leave your father's house and you're going to be free and and as a girl, because now for me as a girl, the biggest thing that I thought I wanted was freedom, because I was never really allowed to go anywhere. So you think when you're an adult and you can go wherever you want, life is going to be perfect. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think what I was definitely not prepared for is just how, I mean, life is hard. That's I didn't expect that. As a child, I thought things were easy. You're an adult, you have a job, you have a house, you have what? But now as I've gotten there, I've realized that things are hard, but it gets quite easy when you immerse yourself into it, whatever it is. If it's work, I'm gonna do it passionately. If it's going for my friends, whatever, like, you can have your way around it. So I think it's not as perfect. It's not the bed of roses I thought it was. But the thorns are fine too. So it's just that sweet and sour.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? What did you imagine it would be like?
Huh. See, my life is different from other people.
Yeah.
Because what I imagined for my life is not actually what happened, but what happened was better than what I imagined.
Yeah.
So I got more than what I looked at.
Yeah.
When I was younger, I didn't think I would leave Wakiso. I didn't think I would be anything special, because they would send me for school fees. We were not rich. So I didn't see myself anywhere. I didn't see myself going to America. I didn't see myself doing aviation and airplanes and stuff.
Yeah.
But when I got in high school, I started picking interest in that. And my dreams kind of just changed. And I'm like, okay, I can do this. And then when it actually happened, so I'd say I achieved my dreams. I'm still on the journey, to go, but, the life I'm living right now is not what I imagined. It's better than what I dreamed.
Yeah.
I dreamt, and, but I know I can be better. And even the smallest things, when I was in Uganda, before I left for the U.S., I set goals aside, what I wanted to do. I wanted to get a passport, I wanted to get a driver's license, and I wanted to get, remember what the other was, right after senior six.
Yeah.
So I started working on each one of them, and I did. Once I make that, I check it off. I do that, I check it off. So it has, it helped me. I got to a point where I need to get more goals. I need to dream.
Because these ones have been accomplished.
Yeah, these ones have been accomplished. I need to dream bigger. So, like, and that's where I'm at right now in my life is like, God has helped me to be where I'm at. Now I'm just like, how can I be better? What can I do to add on to the community, help people with what I've done? And also, I believe that will also keep taking me higher. I don't want people to think in Atuko, Yamala, you know.
Yeah.
There's still things you still struggle with and do, but also you have to appreciate where God has,
so far it's way has brought you.
So, yeah. So that's what I would say.
That's nice. Mm. What traits or habits do you get from your parents?
Hey, so I was actually going to just say that because we're doing a podcast, and if I don't know if you've noticed, like when I'm sitting, my leg is shaking like this. I do like the leg shake like this, and I also like cross my legs like this. Actually, when you asked me that, I was just crossing like that.
Yeah.
So we're recording one, and I was with him, and they said that exactly your dad. And like when I'm walking, I have my back, my hands in the back. Sometimes if I'm walking alone, just thinking, just taking a walk, I like to put my both my hands on the back. My dad does that a lot. I think all the traits I have mostly are from my dad, like the way he does his things and the way he sits. It's just from my dad.
That's funny. It's so funny how we, like, even if you're not close with your parent, like, there are just things that will rub off on you without even wanting them to. And I feel like for me, I'm also the same. Like, I get a lot from my dad.
Mm-hmm.
Not sure if, because he was like my primary, I guess, caregiver.
Yeah.
But I've noticed that I think the biggest trait that I get from my dad is his kindness. My dad is like the kindest person I'd ever met. And as a child, it used to annoy me. Like, we're from church, now you have to greet 100 people, do words. And then, you know, as a child, you don't understand it. Like, we're going here, now we are in a lift, now there are 60 people in our back seat. You get. So as a child, I never understood it. But now I think as an adult, it's the, and it's also the thing that has bonded us now, even as an as adults, you know. So I feel like the giving, the willingness to give and that kind of thing. But yeah, I feel like we'll talk to the cows home, get home if we get into our childhood. But it was really nice having you here. But before you go, I wanted to know what kind of message you'd leave with someone who is here in Uganda and they're trying to be a content creator, you know, like you. They want to have a show like the Ugandan Boy Talk show and right now they just feel very limited, whether it's, you know, equipment or not even content or whatever, but they just feel like they can't do it. But you're a boy from Wakiso who's done it, so what can you tell them?
One thing I really love, and this is my goal for 2024, is collaboration over competition. I feel like on your podcast is something you can add to my podcast.
Yeah,
I feel like on my podcast is something I can add. We might be on the different levels of where we are with life, but there's always somebody who can add something to you.
Yeah,
and once we capture that as content creators in Uganda, collaboration over competition, we're gonna help each other succeed.
It's like the Kenyans are doing
exactly. But when you see like our music thing here in Uganda, I'm the big, whatever they get even names. That's why they fight over and over. But for the content creator in Uganda here, those who are on another level, they should lend a hand to somebody who is studying. I have a motto on my podcast. I don't really use it on my logos and stuff, but I have, we rise by lifting each other up. So like, we're going to support each other and we rise together. So the content creators that are already out there that are doing things, you should hold up on, like, help either person. And for me to have a successful show, which was small, it was my first ever live podcast. And it, I said that as a joke because I was like, man, I'm going to Uganda. Why don't I do a show? I said it in, like, October. I didn't think about it. I didn't say I'm going to do a live show like a year before, which now that I know, I'm going to, every time I come to Uganda, I'll make sure like, I can do a second edition, do something like that. It would be pretty cool. But I feel like we have to support each other. Help each other because we're all at different levels, and when we meet together, I know there's a community for podcast. I don't know if you're in that. There's a community podcasters community in, on WhatsApp.
No, not in that.
There's somebody who made it. I think their podcast they're on Uganda.
I actually just saw that podcast like a few days ago.
So they they've been like helping other people, but there's also we're struggling with that like competition. So people think like when we're doing the same thing, we're competing.
Oh.
Like we're not competing. Like you having a podcast, there's no way it's going to affect me.
Right.
There's no way it's going to, I'm just excited because you're doing it. Like we can share ideas. We can both support each other. We're both going to succeed. People don't have that in the head of like, they don't believe that both people can succeed doing the same thing. And it's only actually the same because the way you do your podcast is different from how I do mine. And the people who are going to love how you do yours, the people who are going to love how I do mine, the people. And at the end of the day.
Both, yeah. People who won't like any.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, there's somebody who is going to benefit. And that's the goal of the podcast. That's the goal of my podcast. I don't fight for numbers. I don't fight for. I'll do my work. I do my job. I put it out there. Somebody who watches it and interests him, that's for you. And somebody who doesn't like it, I agree. There's podcasts I don't listen to. I'm not going to lie. Right. You know, because that's not my type. And I don't take that as an offense. I know there's somebody else who it's meant for. So I'll just say, like, people, content creators here, or those who want to start podcasts, just keep doing what you're doing. Be consistent. I know sometimes it's hard, but just do it because you love it and out of your heart. So just do it.
Yeah, and just to conclude, I feel like just echoing on that collaboration point, I feel like it's really that thing that's going to push Uganda, you know, to the next level because, I mean, we have very few content creators. Like, I don't even see where the competition would come from, you know? Because even if we were selling G-Nuts by each other on the roadside, the way you sell yours is not the same way, you know? Even if it was the same product. So I feel like we need to definitely do that more. And I love that we have platforms like these. Even the fact that, you know, you called your show the Ugandan Boy Talk Show, because that's you sharing your platform with the country.
Yep.
There's so many people that would go out there and just be like, I left Uganda. I don't want anything to do with that place. But I love that you're holding the flag high and you're representing, which is huge, you know. I'm very big on that Pan-Africanism and togetherness. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but it was so nice to have you on.
Yeah.
I'm glad that this finally happened. Maybe until you come back home, we'll do a part two.
Yeah.
But I've definitely learned so much.
I'll have you on my podcast too.
For sure, and, for sure. I've learned so much from you as well. So I'm just really honored. Any parting shots?
No parting shots, but actually, you know, for, not for the listeners. The listeners are more subscribe, follow her podcast and my podcast. Nice stuff. Do all that good stuff. But yeah, I'll reserve my comments so when I have my questions when I have you in my podcast. I like these questions that I have, but also like as one idea, like I like to share, I'm gonna give it away to people who do podcasts and that. What has helped me to be consistent, people ask me a lot of that. I've released 180 episodes. People ask you, tell me about Uganda, how are you able to do all those episodes? When I was starting my podcast, I was researching and doing stuff. I was like, how can I get questions? Oh, how can I get guests? It's hard. So I came up with a signature question for the podcast, like, who would you like to see on my podcast next?
I thought they can recommend the next person.
So when you host me on your podcast, I'll recommend, I would love to hear a story from this person. Nice. It doesn't mean those people are going to say yes, but it gives you an option. So you don't have to be out there looking around like, who do I host next? Who do I host next?
Yeah.
That has helped me a lot. So I would say people who are hosting podcasts, you can take that on. It's not it's not a copyrighted thing, so you can just take it on and just use it.
I think it works for most of us because even me, the guests that I've had, most times when someone comes on, they will like tell someone else or someone will listen to their episode and be like, "Oh, my friend could come on as well." So but working together is the thing for sure. But otherwise, it was so nice to do this. Guys, I really hope you followed us at this point. I don't like shouting, it's just follow us our socials and everything. And where can we find you?
The Ugandan Boy Talk Show on every social media platform and all wherever you get your podcasts. It should be everywhere. Google Podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, or whatever they call Spotify podcasters, YouTube. Yeah. Guys, go support my YouTube. YouTube is hard, and I don't have money to buy followers.
People buy followers.
They do. So, like, people buy followers, people buy views. Yeah. I'm not going to do that. Whether you come and find two views, two people, those are the people that came and watched it. So, I'm not going to buy it. So, if you go on my YouTube and you find two views, those are the people that watched it. I didn't buy them. And if you find, like, Prim's episode is now, like, 2,500. Like, I didn't buy any of those. Those are two people who decided to watch. So, we are growing to Zimbabwe ZB. I don't have money to buy followers. So, people who can follow me, just follow. So, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, thank you. We'll attach everything. Otherwise, it was so nice to have you. Yeah, I usually just say bye.
Bye.
Nice. Bye, guys.
Hey there, this is Bonnie Kibuka, the host of the Ugandan Boy Talk Show. Thanks for watching and listening to my podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure you share it with a friend and recommend somebody to this podcast. Don't forget to leave a feedback on this podcast because that's how we grow. And also don't forget to share, like, subscribe, and comment. Join us on our social media platforms on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. So we'd love to hear from you. Thank you very much and be blessed.